This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. And we're going to Washington, where there's an unusual event, which is reconsidering the administrator for NASA. You will all recall the backstory. Bob, a very good evening to you. The backstory is Jared Isaacman was nominated, was about to enter into the nomination process with the U.S. Senate, and then that's part of the backstory. What else? Good evening, Bob.
Good evening, John. Well, the full backstory is he was nominated by Trump to be NASA administrator in December of 24. For those that don't remember, Jared Isaacman's a billionaire who flew twice on his own private manned missions using a Dragon capsule on a Falcon 9. He even did a spacewalk on the second mission. So he's a space cadet. He's also, though, a billionaire. And he was nominated by Trump to be head of NASA in December. He went through the committee hearing processes, the vetting, the whole deal. He sold off some of his companies so there wouldn't be conflicts of interest. And then he was scheduled to have a Senate vote in early June to get him nominated. And all signs said he would be easily nominated. But just before that Senate vote, Trump suddenly withdrew his nomination, said, nope, I'm not going to do it. There were a lot of rumors about why he did this, but we've never really gotten a clear answer. One of the things we thought that people speculated was that Isaacman had previously supported Democrats with donations, mostly Democrats. And that was put some took some gloss over his nomination for the Republican Trump administration. And secondly, he had close links to Musk because of his missions to into space on Falcon 9 with SpaceX. And at the time that Trump withdrew the nomination, it was also about the time he was having his kerfuffle with Musk. They were fighting over budget. And so we tied those two things together. We really didn't know why. Well, now there are anonymous. There's a story from Bloomberg that says, according to anonymous sources, which, of course, we need to take with skepticism, that Isaacman has had several meetings with Trump in the last few weeks to discuss, let me quote, NASA's operational plans and future plans. So Trump and he are talking about NASA and stuff. So it's now come up that maybe Trump is reconsidering renominating Isaacman. If he does, Isaacman will be confirmed pretty quickly, I think, by the Senate, because he's already gone through all the vetting processes and the committee hearings. One of the reasons Trump might be thinking about this is that he has appointed as an interim administrator Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy. As an interim head. But Duffy has two jobs then. He's transportation secretary and NASA administrator. And he's not focused then on one or the other. And it's distracting, I think. And so Trump might be thinking, well, you know, he really does need a NASA administrator. And to find somebody else and get him go through the whole vetting process might take a year. If he picks Isaacman, he'll get him quickly. And it could be they're working out what they both think should happen, that they'll both be happy with, and that'll make it happen. We'll have to see and wait and see, John.
He's certainly qualified in terms of being a low Earth orbit master, a spacewalker. Good heavens, Bob.
One of the things about I've had reservations about Isaacman. I won't deny that, and I continue to do. But one of the things about Isaacman that I think will really be significant is that if he is NASA administrator, he's going to look at that next SLS Orion mission scheduled for next spring to send four astronauts around the moon. And as someone who's flown in space, I think he will look closely at that, whether it's safe. And he might actually make the wise decision to say, we should not put people on that Orion capsule with that questionable heat shield at this time. I hope that. will be the case, but we'll have to wait and see. Once again, these are anonymous sources. Nothing's confirmed. So this could be just simply gamesmanship in Washington and not real at all.
Commercial space, the marketplace. That's how we're going to Mars, the marketplace. This time, however, it's Stoke Space. What is that, Bob?
Oh, we've talked about Stoke Space a number of times. They're developing what they call their Nova rocket. And what makes the Nova rocket unique would be that its first stage, this is not unique, would land vertically like SpaceX's and Falcon 9 first stage, and it would be reusable. But what makes the Nova rocket unique is the upper stage. They have designed a very, very radical nozzle design for the upper stage. Instead of a single nozzle in the center, it's a ring of tiny nozzles around the outside, and everything is protected by a heat shield. So this design, which they've now tested aggressively and works, would then allow that upper stage to return like a capsule. And so everything would be completely reusable, completely. And so they have, the key here is that they've now raised an additional $510 million in new investment capital, private funds. This is on top of almost $500 million that they raised before. So they've got almost $1 billion on hand in cash to seed. They're saying they're going to launch Nova for the first time next year, but they're not clear exactly when. They've been very coy about this information, which I guess is smart. They're not going to give a date that they're going to then be late. They've been quiet. But they have done all that. They're doing the good due diligence engineering, John. With all this money behind them, this company could very well become a major competitor, because completely reusable rocket would in the end be cheaper than any other rocket, including SpaceX's. So that's a big deal, and they got the money.
You made that point the last time, Bob, that reusability is not some secret that you have to break into a safe to succeed with. It is a commitment by engineers that of well-known technology. Do I say that correctly?
You do say that correctly, but I would say it, not so much that it's a well-known technology, but it's a proven technology. There's no doubt that it's still tough to do. And even though SpaceX makes it easy, they've got years of experience. For a new company or a new entity to do this, it's going to be hard. But it doesn't mean it can't be done. They just have to go ahead and make the commitment. And Stoke Space has done that, much like Rocket Lab is doing it with its Neutron rocket. And much like New Glenn, Blue Origin says it wants to do it with its New Glenn rocket. But once again, they got to fly and they got to do it multiple times to really learn how.
AST Space Mobile signs up Verizon. I hesitate. I am a Verizon customer. Verizon is now entirely robotic. I wonder if AST Space Mobile knows that. To find a human being at Verizon is a snipe hunt.
You know, John, this, I think, is a win-win for the subscribers of Verizon. It's also a win-win for AST Space Mobile. Let me explain what Space Mobile is. It is launching a constellation of satellites. They call them Bluebirds, which would allow for direct cell phone to satellite service. In other words, those satellites act as a cell tower in space. SpaceX is doing the same thing with Starlink. So they're competing with each other. But AST Space Mobile already has a deal with AT&T's cell phone service. It is now, the news here is it has signed up Verizon also to provide, to use its satellites as cell phones for its smartphones. What that means is that if you're in an area that's dead, that has no cell towers, it will then switch to the orbital constellation to provide you service. There will be no dead spots anywhere in the world. Now, these constellations are still in their preliminary stages. Right now, they're only providing things like text and emergency communications, but they are going to keep launching the satellites. AST has 5 Bluebirds in orbit right now. Their constellation is supposed to be about 60. They hope to have half the constellation up by the end of next year. With Starlink, we're going to have a lot of rocket launches going on. And what that means is that there's now options for cell phone users.
And the options will continue to be created. I understand that. But eventually, Bob, we'll get to a consolidation phase. That's far ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it's an interesting thing, I think, in terms of cell phones. Both Starlink and AST Mobile are offering this. In fact, it's not clear that Verizon or AT&T have exclusive contracts with AST. It could be they will sign up both Starlink and AST. To make sure they have really good coverage. We'll have to see in what way it works out. The technologies, though, are very different. Starlink depends on many, many satellites, small satellites. AST is depending on a small number of very, very large satellites. These satellites are in many ways the largest ever launched because when their solar panels open, they're absolutely gigantic, football fields across. And so the technology doesn't, you can't merge the technology. You can only merge the service.
What I like about Starlink is with the multiple choices you have flying over you at all times, taking one or five or 50 out would not change the transmission, whereas one big one could easily lead to the system going down for a while.
Yeah, but in the case of AST, these are not high orbit geosynchronous satellites. They're in lower orbit, and there's going to be a lot of them. So they're covering themselves in that manner. Granted, it isn't as robustly secure, but still, when you got 60 satellites in orbit, in low Earth orbit, you're pretty well covered.
And Starlink did go down for several hours weeks ago, and so it's not completely exempt from the risk. All right, a Canadian rocket startup. Now, Bob, I forget which countries are friendly to startups and which are not. Does Canada have a reputation either way?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. Canada is part of the Commonwealth of the United Kingdom. And so you'd think it would have the same problems as the UK and Australia have had with red tape. It's not clear yet whether Canada is a problem or not. It really isn't clear because no one's actually gotten to the point where they're close to launching. When they're getting close to launching, if they have to sit and wait for licenses, then we'll know. But we're not that stage yet. It looks like Canada is less of a problem. There are two organizations that are trying to establish spaceports in Canada and rocket companies. One has been around since 2016. That's in Nova Scotia. They've never gotten anything off the ground. A lot of their problems have to do with the Ukraine war. They were originally going to use a Ukrainian rocket. The new company is NordSpace. They only formed 3 years ago. They've already established a spaceport on Newfoundland. And they even tried last week to do a suborbital test launch. They had to scrub it and delay it because they had fuel leaks, but nothing damaged. And so they're hoping to do it later. Well, in this past week, they've signed two different contracts for getting their spaceport operational. One of the contracts was to establish ground stations with another company. They got a subcontractor to provide them the ground stations around the spaceport and elsewhere. And now this is more recently they signed a deal with a company that has been providing mission control software for Norway's Andøya spaceport. That spaceport's been around for a long time. It only recently went commercial to trying to do orbital flights. Well, this company is now going to provide the mission control software for NordSpace. So this company is really moving fast to get moving and get it to launch. And it's very they're doing engine tests of their full orbital rocket, and they hope to do that suborbital launch in the next few months, I suppose. So this company is moving someplace, John. So we're going to find out soon if Canada is friendly or not. But it certainly has action going on.
SpaceX reuses a first stage booster for the 1,500th time. Okay, Bob.
Not quite that much, John, but it is news. They launched another 28 Starlink satellites earlier this week, and I should say that's not the only launch this week. They've done others besides that, but the launch included a first stage that completed its 29th flight. That is not the most used Falcon booster. They have another one that's flown 30 times. Those two boosters have flown more than two other of the shuttles. And in fact, they are moving up on the rankings. I posted this on Behind the Black as the most used space vehicle. Discovery is the most with 39. Atlantis is the second most with 33 uses. But there's a Falcon booster with 30. And now this booster has 29. And I expect several Falcon 9 boosters to eventually eclipse all the shuttles significantly. And that's just indicating, once again, the changing rocket business.
Yes, soon to be displayed at the Smithsonian as champions of boost. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going looking for an interstellar visitor. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.